Welcome to Pod Summarizer, the way to summarize your favorite podcasts. Today, we have a summary of Mel Robbins. In this episode, Mel welcomes listeners to the podcast, emphasizing the importance of the conversation ahead. She highlights the value of time and the desire for clarity and direction in life. This episode promises to open up new possibilities and provide guidance for those seeking answers. Remember to follow us on X and Instagram and on our website, podsummarizer.xyz. And now, let's begin.
Hey, it's your friend Mel, and I am absolutely thrilled that you are here. The conversation today is going to be extraordinary. You know, it's always such an honor to spend time with you, to be together with you. And if you're a brand new listener, I also want to take a moment and personally welcome you to the Mel Robbins podcast family. I'm thrilled that you're here, and I'm thrilled that you hit play on this particular episode because it's going to be extraordinary. It's going to be exactly what you need to hear. And because you hit play on this episode, I already know something about you. I know that you're someone who values your time because you're making time to listen to a conversation that will give you greater clarity, purpose, and direction. I also suspect that you're looking for some answers, for a way to make sense of what's going on in your life and for guidance on how to move forward. If someone sent you this episode, I want to take a moment and point something out that's really important. You have people in your life who love you, and they want you to experience this conversation because they are certain that what you're about to hear will change your life. It'll open you up to bigger possibilities. And I want you to really listen today and take in everything that you're about to learn, because if you do, time will slow down. Your heart will soften. Your guard will drop. Your mind will expand, and you will know with every cell of your being that what you're hearing today is meant just for you, because it is. Jay Shetty is a person who is so hard to define because the impact that he has on people's lives transcends a label, and it is truly global. I consider Jay to be one of my closest friends, especially in this business. To the world, he's known as the host of one of the most successful and award-winning podcasts on the planet. I'm talking about On Purpose with Jay Shetty. He is also the number one New York Times bestselling author of two books, Think Like a Monk and 8 Rules of Love, which have been translated into over 47 languages. Jay is also the chief purpose officer for Calm, the wildly, wildly popular meditation app. He is a former monk who has reinvented himself over and over again. And his work and his life are going to help you find greater purpose and meaning in yours. Please help me welcome the remarkable Jay Shetty to the Mel Robbins podcast. Oh my gosh, Jay Shetty in the house in Boston. This is just, I have been waiting to welcome you in. Here in person, Jay, my friend, I'm so excited you're here.
Mel, you're the best. And seeing your entire team and your beautiful studio space, I mean, it's incredible when you get to see your friend's place of genius. And I feel so lucky to be able to walk into it today. And it truly is infused with all your energy. So it's so beautiful to be here. I'm so grateful to be on your incredible podcast. The way you've been serving and showing up for people and truly putting your heart there. And I want people to know, not just in the last 24 months, for decades of just showing up for people privately, personally, publicly. It's incredible to watch, and I'm grateful to be your friend. So thank you.
Oh, Jay, you're going to make me cry.
Thank you.
Oh, so that, okay, I got to pull myself together. I would love to start by having you speak directly to the person who is with us right now. How might they feel different if they take everything to heart that you're about to share with us today, wisdom that you've learned, lessons that you want to share, mistakes that you've made? What could change about their life?
I believe if someone really listens today and then reflects and then applies what we share, I believe their mind will become their best friend, not their worst enemy.
Having delved into the profound impact of genuine connection and support, the conversation now shifts to the essential role of passion and service, exploring how true purpose emerges when personal interests are aligned with improving the lives of others.
If your passion doesn't have a service element, if you don't use it to improve people's lives, if you don't use it to inform other people, if you don't use it to make a difference in someone's life, it's not a purpose. So let me give an example. If you're a photographer and your favorite passion in the world is photography, you love finding unique locations, you love capturing human emotion, you love capturing memories for people. As soon as you start doing it for others, it's a purpose. There you have it. It's that simple. It's not like you have to go on a whole charity trail and start taking pictures and giving them out for free. When you start capturing moments and you do it with that intent, it's a service. There's a beautiful study that I love from Amy Wisniewski and her team at the Yale School of Management. So they went out in 2019 to research what they believed was the most difficult job in America. Any guesses, Mel?
Psychologically or physically?
They just went out to think what was the most difficult job.
I think probably teacher.
Yeah, that was up there.
Or public servant, I don't know.
All up there. The one that they decided on was hospital cleaner. Because they believed that these people not only have to wash bed sheets, pillows, floors, toilets, plates, they have to wash up after people pass away. So it's a very heavy job. And also, you just finished cleaning a toilet, you leave, and now you got to run in and clean it again. It's not as simple as, hey, we did that once and it doesn't happen anymore. So they went and interviewed these hospital cleaners and they asked them what they did. And the hospital cleaners said, we believe we're low-skilled labor, in their own words. We wash toilets, plates, floors. They carried on and they found this whole group of hospital cleaners who didn't call themselves cleaners. They called themselves healers and carers. These healers worked the exact same hours as the cleaners. They worked the same shifts. They worked the same hospitals. They got paid the same amount, but they were happier, more purposeful, and more productive. So they asked them, why do you call yourself healers? They said, and this blew my mind, like every time I think about this, it really makes me emotional because it's so powerful. They said, we believe that a clean hospital is integral to the healing journey of a patient. We think that when the hospital is clean, people have more dignity at a time of difficulty. We believe that when the hospital is clean, that people's families will spend more time with them. They'll actually surround their bedside because it feels like a clean atmosphere in their time of need. They said, we believe that a clean hospital is part of healing. So how could we see ourselves as anything else? What I love about that, Mel, is that Amy Wisniewski and her team came up with the term called job crafting, which means it's not what you do every day. It's how you feel about what you do every day that changes the experience of it. It's not just what you do. It's not even why you do it. It's how you feel about it. How do you feel about what you do? They all felt that what they did was critical to healing and it transformed their experience. And there's this beautiful quote from Wayne Dyer that I loved where he said, when you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. And I really believe that that's what we're all being called to do right now. When you're feeling stuck, you might not be able to change what's around you. So change how you view it. Change how you look at it. Because all of a sudden, everything starts to change in your favor.
That is the single best definition of purpose I've ever heard. And it's accessible. And I want to make sure that as you're listening to Jay and you're spending time together with us, that you really take away that definition. Because it's even when you're stuck or even when you've just got a lot going on, it's very easy to identify the little things in your life that energize you, whether it's books like Jay or for me, it's I love gardening and flowers and I love cooking. I love spending time with my family. I love making people smile. That brings me energy, right? I love being outside. I love learning. And so when you take those things that naturally bring you energy and you do a little bit more of it, it lifts you up. But then when you figure out ways to extend those things that bring you energy in service of others, now you're on the track of discovering why you're here in the first place.
Yes.
And aligning your life with purpose. And so in that beautiful example you just gave, and thinking about it, energizes people to be like part of something where you're caring for people.
Having delved into the importance of identifying energizing activities and aligning them with purpose, the conversation now shifts to a remarkable individual whose passion for cooking not only nourishes, but also serves her community in profound ways.
Like, she was always a fan of cooking. Since I've known her, she's been an amazing cook. She would literally just cook and deliver meals. She'd get involved in food distribution programs in the area. She'd go and find out and talk to communities of how she could help. Before she made any content, she was just out there doing that. And that's what built her confidence in being able to do it and being able to deliver. And then even when someone said to her, hey, would you cater? She said, I don't want to do it as catering. She loves cooking as an act of love, as an act of service. If you come over, she'd want to cook for you because you're a friend. That's what she enjoys. She wants to cook for people in need. That's what she gets passion from. She doesn't actually want to be said, hey, can you make 20 meals of this? That's not actually what brings her joy. And so you can see how your purpose doesn't have to be your job. Your purpose doesn't have to be big. Your purpose doesn't have to get you followers. Your purpose doesn't need to have social media. It doesn't need to have any of those things. And actually, if you start without all of those things, you'll build more confidence, more self-worth, and more joy that then if you want to do any of those things, they'll happen naturally. They'll come as a byproduct of that infectious energy you feel and that I've seen Radhi feel.
Well, I want to come back to two themes and highlight it. You know, one of the things that you said is it's not about imagining the thing out there. It's about really stopping and listening and reflecting on what Jay is sharing with you about the fact that there's something that's already bringing you energy, that when you do it, it just brings something out in you.
Yes.
And then finding ways to do it in service of others. So if you take the example of your wife, she's focused on cooking as an act of love. It's always been a creative expression. It naturally energizes her. And so she used that to lift herself up in a new chapter of her life. She found a way to be of service. And the amazing thing about life is that when you align yourself with the things that naturally energize you, and you, let's come to a second thing we've talked about, Jay, trust that where you are is somehow in service of where you're meant to go. Follow the energy and follow how you serve others in sharing that energy. And that is how you actually start walking in the path that is meant for you. And I just want to point out that not only is she a New York Times best-selling cookbook author, but the name of the cookbook is Joy Full.
Yes.
As in F-U-L-L.
Yes.
Because you're full of her fabulous vegan cooking. And so she didn't start cooking and serving people in LA because she's like, I'm going to write a cookbook one of these days.
Yeah, exactly.
She did it to lift herself up at a moment in her life where she was stuck.
Yes.
And where she was moving to a new place. And so it's so important to understand it's not the thing that you're imagining. It's the energy in you, and it's the ability to shift your mindset and trust that if you leverage that positive energy in service of others, it always, always, always points you where you're meant to go.
Yes. And people will say to us, but I don't know what I like. I don't know what gives me energy. I hear that a lot today.
You do.
Yeah, where it's like people are just like, I don't know what gives me energy anymore. I'm kind of numb to it. Like, and I think the point is not to find this big, bright light of energy from something. It's this small, tiny voice. It's been ignored for so long that the way it shows up within us isn't always this big, loud scream. It's this quiet little whisper that just says, try this, give it a go. It's not this big calling. I think we think about callings, and what we want to do is this big, bright light of information and a sign. Signs are small. They're whispers. They're quiet. And I think if we just lean into that, it may just be the little voice in your head that says, you love organizing birthdays. Why don't you just organize a couple more birthday parties this year? Oh, you're really good at event planning. Why don't you help your friend with their wedding? Oh, you know what? You're really, really good at writing. Why don't you just write a quote every day, right? It's that little voice. So just follow the whisper.
Do you think that your life, if you look backwards, also provides answers for what energizes you? Because I think it's a very important point to validate that we are at a moment in time where the research bears out that over 80% of us are living in a state of chronic stress.
Having delved into the subtle whispers of personal callings and the importance of recognizing one's strengths, the conversation now shifts to the prevalent feelings of numbness in today's chaotic world and how to navigate through them.
Yes.
The feeling of being numb is very, very common right now, and probably a sign that you're actually mentally well because there's so much chaos and overwhelm and stuff. But so validating that, and even if somebody turns inward and doesn't quite feel it, are there other things that someone can do that you would recommend to help access that if you're just at a point where you just, I am so spent, I don't even know myself anymore?
Yes. I promise you, and I really mean this, and I want everyone to really internalize this as I say it, you are already successful at something. It's just so easy to you that you don't think of it as success. There's something that comes effortlessly to you. Maybe you graduated college with flying colors. Maybe you take care of your kids in the best way possible. Maybe you're just incredible at showing up for your work colleagues. You already are extremely, incredibly successful at something, but because it's easy for you and natural for you, you don't think it's a skill. So look back at your life and look back at all the things that you've done beautifully. You showed up for your friends at college. You helped your colleagues through a tough time. You've already been doing that. You just don't know what that looks like because you think that's what a good person does. And it is what a good person does. But on top of that, it is value that you've been adding all along the way. Look at the clues, look at the footprints, look at the steps behind, and don't take them for granted. Most likely, the things that you don't value because they're simple to you are the things that the world is looking for. Radhi's cooking skill is something that comes really naturally to her. She's worked on it, but it's natural. She didn't value it. She didn't realize what a superpower it was.
So Jay, for the person who's listening, who's now scanning their life and thinking about what they're good at and they're coming up with nothing, what is your advice?
Here's my number one piece of advice. Pick three people from your past. It could be a work colleague, a family member, and a friend. These are people that know you deeply, that you would say know me really, really well. Don't go and do this with anyone else. Do this with people that know you really well. And just ask them, what's something that I do that you always think of me when you're struggling with something? Ask them, what's something that I've done in the past for you or for anyone around us that made you go, wow, that's really cool. That's amazing. And then sit down and ask them, when you're struggling with something, what do I help you do? What do I help you solve? All of a sudden, you get all this input from the people that know you the best because they see in you what you don't see in yourself. We have to remember that. The people that know you and the people that love you, they see in you what you don't see in yourself. What you undervalue is what they deeply value. What you take for granted is what they see as greatness. What you kind of think is normal and average, they adore about you. But you've got to let them tell you that. You've got to let them remind you of that, because otherwise you'll keep devaluing yourself.
You know, what's interesting is that I remember this was like 2 years before I started the podcast. Would literally listen. I still listen to your podcast, Jay, and watch your videos and find so much inspiration from you. I didn't realize I kind of did that with you because I was very stuck. I had reached a point where I was so tired of being on planes and doing the motivational speaking at corporate events, even though I loved it. And I so wanted to get into the podcasting space. And I always know when I want something, because unlike you, who is a very like loving and positive person, my signs show up as jealousy. Like, I don't have the monk version. I have the Mel Robbins version of inspiration. It's sort of in that like agitation, right? And so you have this incredible podcast, and I literally felt so jealous and excited for you, but jealous because I'm, Jay's doing it. That means I can't do it. And, you know, it's already done. And since he's already doing, he does such a great job with On Purpose and the Most Perfect Name.
Having navigated the intricate feelings of jealousy and inspiration in the world of podcasting, the conversation now shifts to the importance of learning from others and the strategies that lead to a successful show.
I was a student for 2 years. There's a reason why we came out of the gate and launched 2 episodes a week. It's because I learned from you that if you do want to have a successful show, you have to do at least that many episodes. And so the learning part and the studying others and allowing others to lead the way and to show you and to truly flip envy into learning from somebody, that is worth $100 million in your life to understand that everybody that is out in the world right now is somebody that you can learn from. It's just unbelievable. And so thank you, thank you, thank you for sharing that. And you know, there's another quote that you have that I absolutely love, Jay. We judge others by their actions, but ourselves by our intentions. What does that mean?
This is something that actually my monk teachers used to repeat to us a lot. And it's a reality check that's a bit of a punch in the gut. So we judge ourselves by our intentions and we judge other people by their actions. So if we feel our intention was good, we feel we're good people. But if someone has a bad action, we feel they're bad people. Whereas what we should be doing is allowing other people to be judged also for their intentions and their actions. So it's a plea, a proposal, a pledge to say, before you judge someone, before you put someone in a box, please learn what their intention was. Because often you'll find that their intention probably wasn't as malicious as you think. It wasn't as manipulative as you think. It wasn't as crazy as you think. It was the same as yours. They too had good intentions. They also got into it with good intentions. But we judge ourselves by our intentions, so we think we're good people. Mm. And we judge other people by their actions, and so we think they're bad people. If I made a mistake and you judge me for my action, all of a sudden you've labeled me. But my intention was so pure and so genuine. I'll give you an example of something that happened recently to me that I feel really, really applies to this. Mm-hmm. And I was doing something with a friend and we did a podcast together and I was traveling on the road or whatever and I didn't post something about it. And my friend messaged me and was just feeling really upset that I hadn't supported them, that I hadn't noticed them, that I hadn't recognized them. And now we're really good friends, so they were able to vocalize it to me.
Right.
But if we weren't, they would have immediately judged and thought that I had some ulterior motive or some agenda. And the truth is, I'm so disconnected from my social media in the sense that I don't post. I'm not there. I'm on the road. I try and stay off my phone for most of the day. And all of a sudden, I was thinking, wait a minute, if they judge me for my action, it looks like I don't care about them. It looks like I don't value them. It looks like this isn't important to me. But my intention was, I love you. You're one of my favorite people. I'm here to help you in whatever way possible. And I just think about the amount of friendships we'd save, the amount of relationships we'd save if we just learned to judge people for their intentions, not their actions.
Do you have like a little trick? Because my like emotions and pettiness can just flood me. Like I've never had training as a monk, Jay. So I would imagine like your sort of engine doesn't rev as high as mine, but it is so easy to see friends out together and then immediately judge them for their actions, that they're excluding you, that they must be talking about you, that now they're closer than you are to them, that it means something. It means you did something. And then of course you respond to all of that emotion. We are so fast to assume. Is there anything that you do or that you recommend that people do?
Mel, there's this thing, I don't know if you've heard of it. It's called the let them theory. Sorry, I had to. I was waiting for you to, which is really good. There's let them and then let me in it, and it works perfectly, which I genuinely believe.
After delving into the intricacies of emotional responses and assumptions in relationships, the conversation shifts to the challenges of measuring love and the limitations of love languages, prompting a deeper reflection on how love is expressed.
Was that text just perfect for what I needed? We're measuring these very immeasurable things. Are we counting days, hours, months, emotions, laughs? What are you going to keep a score on? And so I think we're keeping a score on things that you can't measure. And this is one of the limits I have with the love languages. I actually don't want you to love me the way I want to be loved.
Wait, what do you mean by that?
I believe that if I want you to love me exactly the way I want to be loved, I'm actually limiting how much you can love me. Because you have something to offer me that is different to what I even know I can receive. So if I say to you, Mel, the only way you can show me love is gifts, because that's what blows my mind. That's great. I do like gifts. But guess what? What if your best way to offer love is acts of service? What if your best way of love is quality time? Now I'm going to miss out on the greatness you have to offer me because I'm going to say, I only want you to give me this. What if you wanted to give me the world? And I said, just give me a gift. So I'm limiting how much love. So when love matures, I think when love is young, it's a great principle. But when love matures, and by the way, me and Radhi have been through this. When I met Radhi, I was that guy. So I love gifts. And I had to do a lot of unpacking as to why I love gifts.
Why do you love gifts?
It's because my mom couldn't always be there for me on my birthday. We couldn't spend quality time. She was working. She was the breadwinner. But she always got me that one gift. I'd come home and the Power Ranger would be wrapped up there and I'd unwrap it and I'd have so much joy. So when I met Radhi, Radhi comes from a family where quality time is the gift. They don't really give each other gifts, which to me, when I first met her, I was like, this is bizarre. Like, what is wrong with all of you? And I wanted, this is ridiculous, but I remember the new iPad mini was out and I'd kind of hinted to her that I wanted this iPad mini. Anyway, I unwrapped my gift on my birthday and it's an Asus. I was like, I wanted an iPad mini. Who gets someone an Asus? And it sounds ridiculous, but I'm telling it because of how ridiculous we can be. And she literally said to me, she was like, oh no, but I asked my family and they said this one's got better specs and it's actually better than the iPad and it's better resolution. I was like, but I wanted the iPad. And I'm telling this story because Radhi and me learned as our relationship developed that Radhi had so many beautiful ways to show me love and she turned up in so many amazing ways. But I would ignore all of them because I didn't get a gift on my birthday or the gift I wanted on my birthday. And I think so many of us are ignoring the amazing ways our partners, our kids, our parents show up for us because they don't show up in exactly the way we want. And here's the point. No one will ever love you exactly how you want because that's your job and that's God's job. We will wish, wait, want every single week, month, and year for someone to love us in a particular exact way. And they will always fail us because that was your job. It was never theirs in the first place. That was God's job. It was never theirs in the first place. So open yourself up to the limitless love that people show up. Maybe your partner makes you coffee in the morning. Maybe they're the ones that make the bed. Maybe they're the one when you're on the road to check in with you and order something to your hotel room. Maybe they're the one that reminds you that you forgot your glasses or your wallet. Maybe they're the one that remembers to put the dishes away. Whatever it is, they're doing something and it's love. They may not say I love you. It may not look like I love you, but it is. And by the way, when you tell them, hey, you didn't get me this one thing or you didn't say this one thing, they're thinking, how did you miss all of the other things? And guess what? You discourage them from loving you. You don't encourage someone to love you by telling them you're disappointed. No one's going to give you more because you made them feel bad. People love you more when they see you noticed all the little things they did. And all of a sudden, they feel inspired to give you more.
Jay, it really, as I was listening to you, I was first of all thinking about what an asshole I am in my marriage. So thanks a lot.
We love you, Chris.
Because I so saw myself, right?
And then, me too, by the way.
Yeah, and then something extraordinary happened as I was listening to you. And that is, what a shame that most of us are so busy looking for the one way we expect to be loved that we miss all of the love that is around us and available to us that we don't let in. And what an opportunity to have a shift and really change the way that you see life, you see relationships, and what you open yourself up to. If there's one thing from that perspective and what you learned about yourself and what you learned about what's possible, that being loved the way you want to be loved is your job.
Having delved into the importance of recognizing the love that surrounds us, the conversation now shifts to the realization that it's not solely our partner's responsibility to fulfill our needs, but rather a broader cosmic connection.
It's God's job. It's the universe's job. It's not somebody else's job. And I would say learning how to allow in other people's expression of love is a huge opportunity for you, whether it's your friends, whether it's your parents, whether it's, you know, your kids, your partner, everybody. Like, how do you do that? Especially if you've been a first-class asshole like me. And you've
me
just
too,
been
me
like,
too.
You didn't do it this way. And I thought, you know, like, nobody texted me on the thing and nobody checked in. Like, we're so focused on what's not happening that you're blocking what actually is. And then you just keep preventing it from being an experience that's available to you right now.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. And by the way, I feel the same way too. I it took me so many years of unpacking to understand why I was so fixated. But the way I think about it is the person that texts you when they don't want anything, don't forget that person. The person who calls you when they don't need anything, don't forget that person. The person who comes over and swings by just to chat, even when you're busy, don't forget that person. The person who walks in and remembered that you had something happening at work or something happening in your home or something happening in your life, don't forget that person. We do it by starting to recognize those people in our life that are not big and crazy, but they're consistent. The consistent people in our life are the people that are forgotten. The people who've become like furniture, the people who've become so familiar. But guess what? They were the people that texted you when they needed nothing. They're the people that called you when they wanted nothing. They're the people that checked in with you with no transaction required. Take a moment to just think of that person and message them now and don't ask for anything. Just tell them. Tell them how you feel. Message them and say, thank you so much for showing up for me when you didn't want anything in return. Thank you so much for checking in with me when you got nothing out of it. Acknowledge them for that, because we have to start noticing it. We have to start noticing it. It's so easy. And this is why I have this habit that whenever I think of someone, I send them a message. Whatever my thought may be, I'll send them a message. And the message will just say, thinking of you, Mel, sending you lots of love. And I do it all the time. The amount of times in the last month that that person has responded to me immediately and said, I was just talking about you. I was just thinking about you. Oh my gosh, I was just sharing something you put online or shared on Instagram or whatever it may have been. The amount of times that's happened is truly blowing my mind. And I've realized, because you know, we all have this sense, you and I, all of us, everyone who's listening and watching right now has this intuition when someone needs us. But we're scared. We're scared to message with no reason. We're scared we might be disrupting someone or they're too busy. We're scared, but no, that's what that person wants. That person wants you to just send love when they're busy. That person wants you to say hello when they're having a crazy day, because guess what? You're the only person doing that. Everyone else is asking for something or wants something from them. The best time to message someone is when you don't want anything.
You actually talk about this a lot online, the power of calling somebody, the power of texting somebody, and how much we underestimate this small action. And you also said that we have this amazing sense to sense when somebody needs you. And what I would ask us all to consider is that the people that you care about always need you. Mm-hmm. And that check-in is you doing something that we all need, which is this small act of loving somebody and seeing them and just saying, you know, I have you in mind. You know, one of the reasons why I always tell the person who's listening that I love them is because I think we just vastly inflate what that word actually means. And to me, when you look at the word love, it's two things. It's you admire something in someone else, some quality, some characteristic, something about them, and you consider them, you have them in mind. Mm. And if you admire somebody, something about their values, something about how they show up in life, something about who they are, what they mean to you, and you have them in mind, to your point, sending a text just to say, I was just thinking about you, or making somebody a cup of coffee with the cashew milk because that's what they care about.
Having delved into the profound ways love manifests through simple acts of care, the conversation now shifts to the deeper implications of love, exploring how even the most unexpected roles can embody this powerful emotion.
That's actually an act of love.
It is.
And if we go all the way back to the janitors in the hospital who say that they are healers because they believe that having a clean space for families to gather, for people to heal, is a sacred thing to do for the healing process, then you are demonstrating an act of love. Mm-hmm. How do you think about love?
How do I think about love? Such a beautiful and big question.
Because I feel like, you know, we're coming out of this conversation about how we block it.
Yeah.
Because we're expecting it to be expressed in a certain way.
Yeah.
And that it is all around you.
Yeah.
And you're a person in my life that you show up that way. I mean, there's what you do, which is your job. And the things that you are doing that is in service of the world, but it's not who you are. And my experience of you is somebody who is the expression of love.
Thank you. You're so sweet. That touches my heart. I think what you just said there's even more interesting about blocking love. If you still see your mom calling, that's a blessing. If you still see your dad's name on your phone, sending you a text, that's a blessing. 10 years from now, you're not going to remember the meeting you were in. 20 years from now, you're not going to remember the task you were doing. That's how we block love. Mm. We block love because when it's coming in, when it's coming freely, when it's coming unlimitedly, we don't know how to hold on to it. There's this beautiful poem from India that says, when God wants to give us something, how much can these two little hands hold on to? And when things are taken away from us, how much can these two little hands hold on to? And it's this beautiful idea of God's ever-flowing love that's unlimitedly there, and we can just try catch and hold whatever we can. And at the same time, in when something's going away, there's an insignificance that we have where we can't hold on to it anymore. So what do? We pick up the call. We return it. We message back. We don't block it by saying, oh, they just keep connecting. Oh, that person just keeps calling. Oh, that person just, the amount of people that are blocking love because they're thinking that person's needy, or that person's desperate, or that person's not cool enough to be my friend, or that person's not interesting enough to be my friend. I know so many people today that are leaving friendships and relationships behind because the person's not cool enough, smart enough, talented enough, whatever it is. Because when someone shows and wears their heart on their sleeve, we see that as a weakness. We believe that love is chasing someone rather than wanting someone who never wants to leave. Mm. We would rather chase, pursue, and court someone because we believe that love has to be earned rather than receive it freely from all of these people around us who are giving it to us unlimitedly because we think that love is valuable if it's rare. We believe that love is valuable if it's given in small doses. If someone's holding it back a little, it feels like power. And that feels like love to us. But that's not love, it's control. That's not love, it's manipulation. That's not a partnership, it's ownership. So if you're looking for a relationship, love should just flow freely. Love is not measured, it's not calculated, it's not counted, it's not some algorithm, it's not a number, it's completely a free-flowing energetic force. And it is in your life, it is flowing within you, you are made of it, you are actually made of it, and it is flowing freely within you, to you at all times, it's why you are alive. But if you block it, it's like when the sun's out and you turn the blinds down.
Having delved into the essence of love as a free-flowing force, the conversation now shifts to an engaging metaphorical walk with Jay Shetty, where wisdom and insights await to enrich the listener's journey through life.
And, you know, I'm also excited because when you have these conversations, I always think about that I'm taking a walk with you as you're listening. And that today we have invited my dear friend Jay Shetty on this metaphorical walk together on the road of life. And, you know, I was curious, Jay, you've shared so much, you've poured into us with such just grace and wisdom. And, you know, I knew this was going to be extraordinary. I am just blown away by the impact that this will make in the person's life who's listening, the impact it's made in my life, how it has truly brought us closer. I'm so excited for all the things that you're working on. If there was one thing that you want the person who's listening to do, just one thing, the most important thing to really focus on, coming out of just how generous you have been with all of us. Mm-hmm. What is the one thing today?
The one thing is, if you're feeling stuck, I want you to ask yourself one question. Life can either be a school, a hospital, a movie, or a mountain. Ask yourself, if life feels like a school right now, what do I need to learn? Because the same lessons will keep repeating until we learn them. If you're feeling like you're caught in a spiral of the same thing after the same thing, life is trying to teach you something, go to the school of life. Sometimes life feels like a hospital. There's something to heal. If you feel in pain, if you feel held back, if you feel like you're not strong enough yet to go out there and go after something, ask yourself, what do I need to heal? And start healing. Sometimes life feels like a movie. Everything's kind of going in a great direction. Pause and ask yourself, what do I need to experience? Because this experience will also dissipate and disappear. Let me really experience it. And finally, for those who are already on their path, life can feel like a mountain. Ask yourself, what do I need to climb? What skill do I need to learn to climb better? You're stuck because you haven't figured out whether life is a school, a hospital, a movie, or a mountain. And as soon as you see the patterns, are you being questioned again and again to learn something? Are you being challenged again and again to learn something? Are you just feeling so much pain that you can't even bear the burden to move forward? Then it's all about healing. Are you living at the top of the world, but time feels like it's moving too fast? Immerse in that experience. And if you're building right now, build that skill so you can climb higher and faster.
You know, as you're listening, I want to point out something that just happened. You probably saw it if you're watching on YouTube. As Jay just shared that with you, what has been a wildly dreary and ugly day here in Boston shifted. And sunlight came streaming in and lit you up like a spotlight from above. Did you feel that?
You know what? You're more present than I am. I was so locked in. I didn't feel it until you said it. And I looked over and I'm like, wow, it shows how present you are. That's beautiful. I love that.
Well, I was hanging on every word and I realized I'm in the movie. And I really want to be present and experience it. Jay Shetty, what are your parting words, my friend?
My parting words, I'm so grateful to you, Mel. You know, I'm so grateful to you because you've just done this for so many years and given your heart, and you are receiving everything that you deserve. Everything that you're getting, you deserve so deeply. And it is so beautiful to witness your friends being honored and being adored and being loved, because there's a sense that I know we both always have that to shift the world, it's going to take a lot of us. And we're going to have to work together. And what I love about you is that you are always spotlighting your friends. You're always showing up for your friends. You're always supporting your friends behind the scenes and on camera. And I'm just so grateful that you made time for me today. I always say to people, my public life is amazing, but my private life is better. And my private life is better because of people like you. Because we get to have genuine relationships, sincere, deep, real relationships for years offline. And they support everything online. Mm-hmm. If someone's online life is better than their offline life, that's a really hard place to live. And I'm so grateful that because of friends like you, I get to say the opposite.
Well, Jay, I think when things feel dark, the job in life is to glow. Mm. And you've definitely taught me how to do that.
That's it for today's summary. To stay up to date with more summaries and news, follow us on X and Instagram and visit our website, podsummarizer.xyz. If you have any comments, questions, suggestions, or complaints about the content displayed, please do not hesitate to write to us at info@podsummarizer.xyz. Thank you for listening.